The OC podcast is proudly brought to you by beer52.com. And as a listener to the show, we would like to reward you with a free case of craft beer. All you need to do is pay the $2.95 delivery. Head on over to beer52.com/MFC and order your free case today. Beer52 is a 5-star rating in Trustpilot, so it's easy to see that their members love their service. So head on over now to beer52.com/MFC and order your case.
Beer. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. Here's McHugh.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster will look back on yesterday's extremely disappointing Scottish Cup exit. We'll look ahead to Wednesday's meeting with Hibs and possibly moan quite a lot about a certain post-match interview. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers. How you doing?
Jay, I'll start with yourself as I tend to do. And yesterday's Scottish Cup exit, while given performance levels have been that poor this season, it possibly doesn't come as a great surprise. It was a very, very dismal day at Fir Park. The team didn't get going. We thought perhaps the introduction of Ross McCormack would give us a lift, would give us a much-needed spark. It didn't arrive, and really we were lucky to get one. That goal did come in the 93rd minute when the game was already beyond us. We exit the Scottish Cup at the first hurdle after sampling as close as you can get to success without lifting the trophy last season. It's a hard one to take.
Yeah, I think it's possibly the most disappointing game I think I've experienced this season. And there's, of course, been a few candidates for that. But I think that we've known for quite a long time now that, you know, this particular Stephen Robinson side, as we say plenty of times on the podcast, that has an absolute stinker. You know, and it's lockers. We are capable of putting in some of the worst performances I've seen from a Motherwell side in many a year. So, you know, on the face of it, it's maybe not surprising that we happened to do so yesterday. But when you factor in all the other aspects that, you know, as you say, the idea of Ross McCormack being in the side, you know, pretty much a new look side in terms of the formation. You know, it was pretty much what appeared to be a 4-2-3-1 with McCormack in behind Johnson. You know, Freer getting a run out, the new boy on the other side. I've not yet heard his name said enough to actually give an attempt at pronouncing it properly, but you know, the American lad on the wing. And I think, you know, having been away for a couple of weeks, had the build up, had the excitement of the new signings, turning up and even seeing that lineup at 2 o'clock, knowing it's a cup tie, it's a home game, it's a chance, reading comments from Ross County fans online about how utterly dire they've been. I think, you know, to go into the game with that level of anticipation, not expectation, absolutely not. I don't think there has been any great expectations on this Motherwell side for quite a while. But to go into the game with genuine excitement, genuine enthusiasm, and genuine confidence for perhaps the first time, you know, in many, many weeks, to then serve up that performance, it was just absolutely dire, and it was really, really disappointing. You know, I think I got the impression that we did start with instructions to perhaps try and keep the ball down a little bit more and try and, you know, pick a pass. But it became clear very, very early on that either we'd, you know, forgotten, you know, we'd had it drilled out of us how to deal with having the ball on the deck, or we just weren't really that interested. You know, there didn't seem to be any off the ball movement. In fact, there was one point in the first half I remember when Charles Dunn had a free kick just inside their own half, and normally he would just step up and lump that forward, but he actually stood for a good while, you know, arms outstretched looking for somebody to want it, and there just wasn't that appetite. I don't know if the players thought, well, Ross McCormack's on the park, so he'll go and get it. You know, it was just pretty dismal. And then after a wee while, we just resorted to type, regardless of who was in the park, regardless of the system we were playing. The long ball just materialised again. And we just looked like a side who hadn't played since, you know, the 30th of December. And it's all very, you know, easy to say that because we are a side who hasn't played since then. But when you had such a big deal made about going to Tenerife and the whole beneficial side of warm weather training and all the social media content to show us how hard you know, the team were working out in Tenerife, to then come back and serve up that performance. You know, it's just such an anticlimax and a big, big disappointment.
Holy Aribi.
Aribi. That's actually all right. That's fine. Aribi.
Well, as the Motherwell website, I've given a kind of easy guide. I think it was actually aimed specifically at us so we could pronounce his name and just ducked out in the first possible attempt to do it. But yeah, said, on a serious note, we often talk about ways to lose football matches. We've been used to abject, poor displays this season. And then every so often a result will come along that'll lift the spirits. I think the Hamilton result's a good example of that, because we had been in poor form. We got the win, though, at New Douglas Park. And you go into 2019 slightly buoyed. You've won the derby. You've won the local bragging rights. You've moved well clear of them at the foot of the table as well. You can start to look up, and that's what we mentioned in the last podcast. We can now start to look up the table, stop looking over our shoulders, and who knows, we can target catching Livingston. We've got the Scottish Cup coming up. We've got an opener against, albeit they were just out of the Premiership, but a lower league team. And we've failed. We've failed so miserably. We've failed to give us any hope going forward with such a poor performance. We're now going into a run of games where we'll have midweeks quite regularly as well. And I'm back to square one. I just don't want to go to the football. It's amazing how you can start dreading the football, then you go a couple of weeks without it and you're desperate to get back, and then just end up at square one all over again. And that has been the tail of the tape for Motherwell this season.
Well, I think somebody replied to my Twitter saying we seem to go through three or four shite games and then, you know, Robinson gets himself out of a hole with a result or two. And I think that's just been the cycle of the season. As you say, you know, we're probably as fickle as every other football fan in the world, because, you know, after the Hamilton game, it was a case of, it wasn't great, but we got the points. We can maybe start to concentrate, look ahead, as you says. But yesterday was absolutely atrocious. I just don't think there was, I don't think MD had any idea of what they were meant to be doing. You know, as much as I like Charles Dunn for a player at our level, he doesn't seem to know what he's doing at left back. You know, he's one of Dunn's biggest attributes is his pace. But for both of the goals, they came down his side. The second one especially, the guy sort of walked past him, then put it in across the goals. David Turnbull was playing bizarrely deep for some reason. The game completely passed him by. I don't even really remember him having any real touches of the ball, other than the two or three times where he nearly gave it away. Ross McCormick, you're lucky if he touched the ball three fucking times. One of them was to hit a free kick for 35 yards all on the ground. And Danny Johnson as well. Danny Johnson, I think we've all said, Danny Johnson looks like he could score goals if he's got somebody to work with. So why he was placed up front on his own, I don't know. And again, as Jay says, there was a sort of, I can't even say it looked like it, but it felt like there was an emphasis on passing to start with, and I think it went out of the water even quicker than Jay did, because I don't know how many times we sort of punted it towards a reboot in the right wing, and it either went over his head or he was then challenging for a header that I don't know if he was supposed to bring it down on his forehead or something, but the game seemed to then go on like that, and Ross County were controlling the midfield. There was it was just utterly shite. I don't know what the game plan was. I don't think the players knew what the game plan was. And you know, if it wasn't for Gillespie, they could have had another two or three goals. I don't think their goalie had very many saves to make. I think I remember him touching two or three balls that were going goalwards. But you know, again, you'd be hard pushed to call them shots on target as well, but it was dire. And I don't know the last time that I actually enjoyed a Motherwell performance. As I said, there was, you know, the result against Hamilton I enjoyed, but I don't ever remember coming away for a fit by this season and really thinking we showed, you know, that we can play some football or we've got something there. You know, it's always been maybe David Turnbull, for example. You know, would say David Turnbull looks up a player. You know, we'd never come away and say what a performance that was. The team looked brilliant, the passing, the moving, whatever. It's always maybe David Turnbull looks a player, or Elliot Freer played well last week, or, you know, something like that. It's individual. I've never actually come away from a game this season, enjoyed myself, felt entertained, and felt that we were moving forward at all, really. You know, as I say, we seem to fall into the trap every time we get a good result. I think this is it. This is where we turn the corner. And it just doesn't fucking happen. So that's it in our season. The game's done. You know, if MD wants to feel anything for the rest of the season, you know, that person will be hoping that we get dragged into a relegation battle, because there's absolutely fuck all for us today. We can sort of coast by hoping that Dundee, Hamilton, you know, that they're utter shite, and, you know, we can pick up the odd point here and there, the odd win here and there, and we'll finish 9th, 10th, and that's it. You know, I mean, if my ticket wasn't paid for, I'm not saying I wouldn't go, but I would certainly be considering any other invites before automatically doing my usual and saying, I've got a fitman on Saturday. You know, so I don't know where we go for it, but it was fucking rubbish, and I just don't know, to be honest with you.
Jay, it's difficult. In the aftermath of a defeat, quite naturally, people go, well, such and such had a poor game, or I even did it myself after watching the highlights. I think for both goals, Tom Aldred has lost Brian Graham, and he's been able to nip in and score the goal. He's almost given him a hat-trick, actually, with a poor clearance as well. But I wouldn't say that Tom Aldred in any way stood out for being poorer than anyone else. The truth of the matter is that anyone that got on that park as an outfield player yesterday, I don't think performed. Jake Hastie did grab a goal in the end, and his first goal for the club. Maybe he could squeeze past Mark, but certainly no one else managed to do that. It was so abject for so many of them.
Oh yeah, I mean, again, it's so difficult to try and pinpoint, you know, what the reasons behind it are. You know, I thought, for example, Aribe, I thought, you know, showed in flashes what he might be capable of, but as Buster says, his main role was to act as a sort of makeshift target man out in the wing. So you had a guy there who, on a few occasions, particularly in the first half, absolutely roasted the county defender with a sublime bit of skill. And yet our main priority, or our main use for him, was to make sure that if one of the defenders or the goalkeeper was punted out, we would just fire it towards him because he happened to be taller than McCormick, Freer and Johnson. You know, there's no direction. There was no, I don't, you know, this idea that, you know, we're a poor team, or we've got poor players, or the players are below par. I agree with that. I've said before that I think, although Robinson gets a lot of the, you know, the criticism, I do think there are players who have to take a long, hard look at themselves. But when they're played, you know, there are times that, you know, as Buster says, it looked as though they didn't even know where they were meant to be. It was as though they'd been, you know, the idea of, you know, playing with wide men and a back four and getting the ball down and trying to create things and all that has been drilled out of them for 18 months. You know, it was just shite from start to finish. And yeah, players, nobody stood out as being particularly bad, but certainly nobody stood out as being, you know, worthy of playing for Motherwell, basically, on that day.
My point was more that nobody, I wouldn't say nobody stood out for being particularly bad. I think there was plenty that were very, very poor. But I would find it difficult in a performance like that to single out one individual. Oh, yeah.
No, I'd agree with that. Of course, some people try. You know, I do know Carol McHugh, I think, was... Yeah, I think Carol McHugh is one of those players where, You know, if you start a game of Football Manager and every player starts on a six and then moves on from there, I think in some people's mind, Carroll McHugh starts on a three and has to have an absolute blinder to even get close to a six. You know, for me, I think it's even pointless. I actually think it's pointless to even try and single out players because a performance like that deserves a lot of criticism as a whole. I think you could actually get a little bit sidetracked if you start to analyse individuals' performance and say, well, McHugh was shit, or this guy was shit, or that guy was shit. I think we need to accept that it was a dreadful performance from start to finish, and questions need to be asked over, you know, where, as Buster says, where are we going to go from here? You know, we've had a lot of chat in the last couple of weeks there about how we've got players now that allow us to play different systems and do this and do that, and then we turn up yesterday, cup tie, against a team that, okay, we maybe shouldn't, you know, there's no God-given right to beat, but we should certainly be putting in a far better performance than we did. And yet, we, no point looked as though, you know, we could win that game. You just have to look at the start of the second half. Ross County clearly went in at half-time, had a discussion about how the first half had went, realised that we were, you know, shaky, lacking confidence, realised we were all over the place a little bit. And you could actually see that they came out that second half with a proper game plan. They got on the ball, they attacked us, they tried to, you know, hit the counter. It was clear that they had made a conscious decision to come out at the start of that second half and take the game to us. I don't think we ever do anything like that. You know, we don't seem to... You never really see us make a genuine change in terms of strategy, in terms of, you know, ideas, in terms of what we're going to do. And yet Ross County did it and it worked brilliantly because, you know, they get the two goals and we're dumped out the cup. And yet it actually took until Jake Hastie's, you know, injury time goal before there was even any urgency. You know, at times in the 70th, 80th minute, you were sitting there thinking, can somebody please point out to the players on the park that we are currently crashing out of the Scottish Cup? Because it looked as though they were, you know, still in Tenerife. It actually took the Hasty goal for them to go, oh, wait a minute, we've only got about a minute left to try and get back in this tie. And suddenly there was a wee bit of urgency. The whole thing is broken. That's the problem. You know, we can talk all day about Ross McCormick. I mean, let's be honest, Ross McCormick should never have even started the game. It was quite clear he wasn't fit. Not only was it quite clear he wasn't fit, he was played in a position that was largely irrelevant to the way we then went on and played. If we were going to be punting the ball or passing the ball out to the wings and then trying to get into the box or going long to Danny Johnson, Ross McCormick is, you know, impotent in that situation. You know, playing a player in the hole and then not utilising them in any way, it's a pointless. You would have been as well playing, say, Grimshaw and McHugh, you know, as holding midfielders and Turnbull just in front of them, rather than putting McCormick there in the middle of a big circle of space where the ball's never in. So he should never have started the game. And I believe Robinson knows he should never have started the game because one of the first things Robinson said in his post-match interview was, well, McCormick get 45 minutes, so that'll do him the world of good. We didn't lose the game because McCormick started. It was still 0-0. You know, instantly on the defensive when nobody had, you know, suggested anything about McCormick. So the fact that McCormick even started was a mistake to begin with. But we can go on all day about how good a player he is and how big a difference he'll make. But overall, things just aren't working. And as Buster says, the season's done. Unless we actually capitulate or St Mirren and Dundee put a good run together and we get the, you know, the inverted commas excitement of a relegation battle, then, you know, there'll be plenty of Motherwell fans right now looking up what else they can do on a Saturday afternoon because there's no point in going to Fir Park.
Yeah, I'm going to go back just a wee bit in terms of the individual criticism. Quite a few of the arguments I saw around criticism of individual players was, well, what about, and then mention another individual? That's certainly not exactly, well, if such and such is getting abused, then why doesn't such and such get abused? We could maybe start by actually focusing on the bigger picture and the fact that as a team we're falling so far below the levels required to even be a semi-decent team in this league. It's embarrassing, and the result yesterday shouldn't come as a surprise. The result in our history, that's not a major upset. We went out to Inverness in the Cup a couple of years ago just because it was a poor performance. We didn't reach the levels required. So it happens. It happens at Motherwell and it's happened throughout our history. My main issue is the fact that we're falling so far short. And that isn't down to Curtis Mayne. That's not down to Carroll McHugh. That is down to the collective, the team that are performing week in, week out, well below the standards required. And until we sort that out from the top, and that has to come from the manager, then there's no hope. There's no hope of better performances. There's very little hope of better results. We will get the odd one. We'll fluke it now and again. But things have to change. And Jay, sorry, I must warn you as well, I'm squeaking in between sentences here because I've had a throat infection most of the week along with various other ailments. But Jay, it takes us on to the post-match interview. McBookie seemingly have got a book on how many times Buster's going to swear about it. Trying to avoid swearing too much. It was baffling, wasn't it? As you say, he started off in the defensive despite stating that he wouldn't be making any excuses, and it was a car crash. I saw Gordon Reid, who's been on the podcast a couple of times, coming on and Twitter and said he was quite surprised that the club let that interview go out. Yeah. It actually smacks Matt McGee, post Rangers Scottish Cup defeat video, where it was a dreadful interview. It was borderline embarrassing for me, actually. And despite being accused otherwise and elsewhere that I don't have much time for the manager, it's quite the opposite. I really want to see Stephen Robinson do well, but yesterday is another kind of notch in the belt of those that want Robinson out. There was too many things that he said during that I just can't work out. The style of football as well, it's almost as if he believes that playing the hoofball style of football is absolutely imperative for us to be a successful side. He referenced Ryan Bowman leaving as one of the almost reasons that we lost, because we didn't have guys like Ryan Bowman in the team. Ryan Bowman was a guy he tried to get rid of for at least 12 months, possibly longer. He mentioned Trevor Carson. Trevor Carson. Right. The goalkeeper was the only player that would get past Mars. And even then, like the goalkeeper can only influence a game to a certain degree. We shouldn't be on the back foot to the extent we were against Ross County, a championship side yesterday. I'm covering quite a lot of it, so forgive me for doing that. But yeah, there's so many question marks over an interview that was meant to be answering questions.
I think what's I agree entirely with what you said. You know, Gordon Reid's tweet. I think our media team get a lot of plaudits in terms of the output they put out, whether it's, you know, the wee quizzes between the players and the coaches and all that kind of stuff, or it's even, you know, viral videos, you know, Pete Hartley joining Pete, what is it, hashtag Pete6, and then obviously Chili D getting onto Radio 1 and all that kind of stuff. They do a lot of good work, but I think we've said before, when things are against us, when the chips are down, I think that the media team, you know, perhaps are a bit naive. We've spoke in the past about the story of the match thing being a good example. I think the only game we've never did a story for the match was the Rangers horsing, and I think that would have been absolutely ludicrous. But I was baffled by the post-match interview. Firstly, baffled by the fact that, you know, as you say, it went on to the internet. I don't know whether Stephen Robinson gets a little bit of a briefing from the media team and he's getting bad advice, or he just really reacts badly to being under pressure and being on the back foot. But it was, as you say, an absolute car crash. Particularly when you factor in the fact that this season the club no longer, you know, put up online his actual pre and post match press conferences. That used to be the way we did it. Now we purposely have our own interviews with players and managers. I presume so that we can, you know, dictate how the interview goes with, you know, softball questions if they're required. And yet we still get what we got post-match. And it's really difficult because I'm very similar to yourself. I come away from a lot of games and actually, you know, try and defend Stephen Robinson. It happened again yesterday. I you know, instantly thought, well, the players, you know, finally got a bit of a change of formation and the players have let them down. You know, this, don't get me wrong, I was criticising Robinson as well, but I was, you know, thinking that maybe a bit more time to get things right, etc. And then you watch that post-match interview and he really, really is his own worst enemy at times. You know, you've touched on a few of the, you know, the aspects of it. The idea that we almost aspire to playing hoofball I mean, for anybody who's not actually watched the interview, he essentially says that, you know, the successful style of football that we played last season, we could no longer play. So we now have to look at a different style that involves, you know, getting the ball down and pass it. As though, you know, teams like Barcelona and Real Madrid all aspire to playing high-class long ball football. And it's only the shite teams without the resources or the players to do so have to, you know, get by with entertaining, a, you know, passing football. It's bizarre. I can't even begin to make any sense of it. You know, as you say, listing players who were missing, including Ryan Bowman, a player that it's widely accepted he tried to move on and wanted rid of. And even the, you know, for me, the really cringeworthy line was the idea that he's a victim of his own success because he got us to two cup finals last season and brought in £4 million, as, you know, in terms of, you know, the cup runs and player fees and things like that. That's a complete, you know, that's almost delusional. What the impact those cup finals have had are to actually give him more time in terms of, you know, folk getting on his back. I think anybody else, particularly Mark McGee, fans would have been on his back long before now. So it's not that expectations have been raised and he's a victim of his own success. It's that people are now starting to get a bit annoyed, whereas they would have probably started, you know, chucking the toys out the pram around September, October, if he hadn't got us to cup finals last season. It's absolutely baffling, and he is his own worst enemy, because anybody who came away from Saturday afternoon thinking, well, that was shit, but, you know, we'll stick by him, then watches that interview and just ends up feeling, you know, what is going on here? Are we genuinely a club that now aspires to playing the long ball? And, you know, the only way we're actually going to see a genuine passing side under Stephen Robinson is because we don't have the players to play the long ball. It makes absolutely no sense. And I just, you know, anybody who's not watched that, I would ask to go and watch it because it's utterly baffling, and I still can't believe that the club have it online.
Just as you said earlier, you know, the line he used, or the phrase, my own success, it was also tagged in with the phrase, a club like Motherwell. And I thought, geez fucking peace. Not because you got us to two cup finals, there's not one of us sitting here thinking we've got a divine fucking right to go to the cup final every year. This is a build up on Motherwell fans know where we are. Motherwell fans know that if we were 9th, 10th in the league, you know, that's no unusual. We've been there. All right, but there was a 5 or 6 year period where we were, you know, top six, and that was absolutely brilliant. But We know in our history, our team's fucking life, we know where we are. And I just, when he came out with that, I was just like, you fucking kidding me on? What does that even mean? Your own success, a club like Motherwell? We know where we are. Everybody's just sick fed up of losing in the manner of the day, creating absolutely fucking nothing. If we were shite but still having the odd chance here and there, then fair enough. We're fucking not, and that's the problem. It's utter shite. It's pure drivel. As I said earlier, you know, I'm never one to be like, nah, fuck this, I'm not going back. But see that first time that you don't go, it's very easy to do something else on the Saturday instead of going the next time.
I mean, yeah. Just to be fair, see when you're saying that, you know, the idea that it's the actual style we're losing, I think that is what it's so obvious that Stephen Robinson doesn't grasp.
Exactly.
You know, from that post-match interview, it is obvious that he genuinely believes that folk are on his back because we've not had a cup run and we're sitting ninth. I've said, you know, even on the podcast and you know, in the pub and on social media, I don't think there is really a moral argument, call it a moral argument, to sack a manager when you've brought them in and you've said, right, for this season, here's a budget to finish 10th and no cup runs. If that manager then has no cup runs and is sitting in 9th, I don't think there's a great deal of justification to sacking that manager or to get on that manager's back in terms of results. However, when the football is as bad as it is, that's when folk are on his back. Folk don't give a fuck about the idea that we were in cup finals. Is that somehow, you know, now we've blown it because we're only 9th. I have no doubt whatsoever that if we were sitting 9th, but we were getting the ball down, we were trying to utilise guys like, you know, David Turnbull, for example, we were perhaps seeing more guys coming through from the youth ranks, but we were still finishing 9th. I think folk would be all right with that. Yes, there would still be folk thinking that we should be top six and all that, folk who have got their heads in the cloud. But you just have to look back to the, you know, what appears to be a lot of Motherwell fans' favourite season of all time was the season we finished bottom. You know, we were getting, okay, we beat Rangers, we beat Celtic, we beat Hearts 6-1, but we were losing to teams that were shit. We were playing, you know, we were getting beat a lot of times, so much so that we finished bottom. And yet folk loved that season because they were proud of the team. They came away from Motherwell games thinking, I've been entertained and I've got a bit of a, you know, a pride and a connection with those guys that are on the park. That's the problem. I don't think a lot of Motherwell, you know, nobody would be standing outside the main stand with a banner saying Robinson out if we were sitting ninth. But trying to play football the right way and trying to bring guys in from the youth team, you know, I'm not suggesting again that we flood the, you know, the team, but that's something that's been sorely missing. You know, Hasty should have been, I'd have stayed Hasty, you know, in ahead of, say, McCormick yesterday. And that's what it is. You need to give fans something to be proud of, something to be entertained with. It's not about results. That's the problem. That's what he's missing here. Nobody's getting on his back because we're sitting ninth and being knocked out the cup. Yes, some folk will be, but the actual overarching problem, the big problem, is the football that you're serving up. There are folk that we know aren't going on a Saturday, are actually, you know, looking for excuses not to go because they can't bear their eyes bleeding anymore. And that's the problem. And the fact that that post-match interview shows that there is absolutely zero grasp on that is worrying. You know, when you combine that with the idea that we are actually aspiring to play dreadful hoofball and the only reason we're looking at alternatives is because we don't have the players for it, that is not, you know, that's not a great outlook for the future. That suggests that if we can actually bring in a few more guys before the close of the January transfer window that allows us to play the long ball, then we'll just go straight back to it because that's our preferred option. And the big problem we've got is we're a fan-owned club. A lot of people kind of, you know, perhaps don't grasp this point, but the reason I've got such a problem with the style of play is that if you're a fan-owned club, the Welsh Society Board, you know, the Welsh Society as a whole can do a lot more to recruit members. That will always be the case. You're never going to have pretty much any organisation like that that's, you know, at its optimum in terms of recruitment, in terms of marketing. The Welsh Society can always do more. I would argue that the Welsh Society has improved, but the only way the Welsh Society can realise its, well, sorry, the only way the club can realise its own full potential is for the Welsh Society to reach its. But the Welsh Society is fighting a losing battle and trying to get folk to join when folk are so put off by the football that's on display. If you've got fans coming away from Fir Park thinking, that was absolutely dreadful, I'm going to look up the cinema listings for Saturday because I'm not going back to watch that. Then they go home and watch an interview that they, you know, leaves them absolutely bailing. They're not going to then sign up to £10 a month to the Welsh Society. We're a fan-owned club, and therefore there needs to be more emphasis on the fact that fans need to be entertained and need to be proud in what they're seeing on the park. Regardless of results, sitting ninth is not a bad position to be in when you budget for 10th, but the football is absolutely terrible, and it is actually detrimental to being a fan-owned club.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very difficult to disagree, but I guess that brings us on now to where we stand on Robinson's future with the football club. And I've said before that I don't want to see Stephen Robinson sacked. I don't want to see any manager sacked. I really hope we can turn it around, but I'm losing hope by the week. Celtic game at Parkhead, albeit that's a game that you expect to lose. That was a turning point in terms of the selection, and to go on and lose the St Mirren game and then lose the Kilmarnock game. If he had got it right and made all these changes and it had brought us 4 points or 6 points, I'd have felt really, really positive. But it didn't work. He didn't really come out and put his hands up to that. He got the result against Accies, and we thought, well, maybe he has kind of turned a corner. We've then had that shite yesterday, and it just feels back to square one. I don't feel that Stephen Robinson is the man to take us forward. He's brought in guys like Ross McCormack, but still kind of rushed them into our team and felt like it was going to be some sort of miracle cure, and then started Renfrews and how much money he's made the football club, and reference of Motherwell as if they're not actually a club he's associated with. Luton are looking for a manager. Stephen Robinson's been linked with the job. I just feel that if they were to take him off our hands just now, it'd maybe be the best for both parties, because I can only see things getting worse in the next 4 months under Robinson.
I think, you know, again, I'm not necessarily, as you say, wanting people to lose their jobs either, but I think Jay's hit the nail on the head. Our goal, our ambition, you know, is to remain in the Premier League. Again, a cup run obviously would probably be a bonus rather than an expectation. So technically, you know, if he's meeting targets, so to speak, you can't really put pressure on somebody for hitting their targets. But you know, as I said there, it's the manner and the way we go about our defeats. It's just I can't even really explain it. You'll know yourself, Sandy. And the listener will know themselves how exactly it is. But, you know, I think when you watch that interview yesterday, it reminds me of, and again, I've seen it referenced on Twitter when I mentioned his interview on Twitter, people were saying it reminds him of Mark McGee, you know, how he sort of went in a wee bit of a wobbly before he eventually got the sack. The way we're playing football reminds me a bit of Stuart McCall before he eventually left as well, again, out of ideas, just doing what he's doing, plodding along. As I say, I don't think I would ever wish a sack on MD, regardless of who they are, whether, you know, you're working beside me in a call centre or you're a football manager, or, you know, I don't think I'd ever wish MD get sacked ever, but, you know, these guys get paid. If these guys get sacked, they get paid, I know, so fuck football managers, actually. But, It's a hard one. I honestly don't know where I would stand on a if it came to it and there was a line, what side of the line I'd be on, I don't know, but something's got to change. Now, whether that be the Robinson and the management team really rethink everything and, you know, stop saying fucking stupid things, basically. The interview yesterday really, really annoyed me. Like, we need a big target, man. Do you really? Is that what we fucking need? Aye. Thanks very much for that. Aye.
Salmon must be really feeling quite down about himself just now, because he gets made to run along the side of the park every bloody game when we play Celtic. Then he just automatically starts for some reason. He's not particularly good, but he must be kind of thinking, well, hold on. To be fair, he must watch Curtis Mayne and think, he's had that many opportunities and no done anything. I could go on and do the same thing. He might even do a wee bit better if I was given a run of games, and he did during the Betfred games. So, why am I far from suggesting that Connor Salmon is going to be the cure for our problems at this moment in time? I find it hard to argue there. He continues to turn to Curtis Mayne. Very rarely does Curtis Mayne not start. He was obviously benched yesterday. Comes on at half time though, because he was obviously the man that Robinson believed was going to change the game. He didn't manage to do so. But on the other hand, Mayne's last appearance was getting himself sent off in a manner that was so close to almost feeling deliberate. It was ridiculous. Mm. It was just that pathetic, the manner to get sent off. Obviously, missed the Aki's game through suspension. Where Salmon, for all he won a lot of heaters, he didn't come close to scoring at any point. Mm. But he did better than Curtis Mayne had in his previous game. So is it training or something like that? Because there is no way that Salmon should have dropped behind Mayne in the pecking order based on the performances recently.
Well, again, I'm no Connor Salmon's biggest fan.
I'm not his biggest fan, to be honest. I think he's absolutely fucking hopeless. But
he's fucking rubbish, and he's been rubbish for fucking years as well. He had two purple patches in his career, one at Kilmarnock, where he scored 17 goals in the first half of the season, and one with Partick Thistle last year, where he scored somewhat 10 goals in 10 games. Now, don't get me wrong, as I say, Curtis Mayne has been fucking woeful as well. I don't see why Curtis Mayne suddenly, maybe because he's our player, maybe that's what it is, maybe hope he'll hit a purple patch as well again, But Connor Salmon's about 6'3". Curtis Main's about 5'10". Ross McCormick's about 5'9". Danny Johnson's about 5'9". Craig Tanner's crippled and 5'5". You know, these are the guys who sort of could and probably would play up front for us. There's only one person in that there who's a big target man. You could maybe punt the ball at Curtis Main, but as I say, he looks a lot bigger than he is. He's probably about 5'10", 11" at most. A 6'2", 7.5" is going to eat that up all day. Whereas, if he needs to get a target man in, it's not going to happen. I don't know what height James Scott is, but he's probably a lot taller than the other. Maybe probably about the same height as Connor Salmon. But I'd like to see James Scott get involved, but I'd hate for him to be thrown up front and then just punting the fucking bottom all day. So I don't know what that comment means. You know, it's all right saying target man can be somebody who just hods the ball up, might be at feet, might be pulling it into their chest or whatever, but that's not going to fucking happen. Don't kid yourself. We're going to punt that ball off 70 yards away.
Is there a point where you nearly suggested there's more to being a striker than scoring goals?
Just to say, Buster said before, I'm sure as well, that, you know, folk he knows who are Partick Thistle fans had told him that, you know, Connor Salmon can do a bit of a job if you get the ball into him, at his feet. So, you know, if Robinson genuinely wants to bring in someone who's going to hold the ball up, and then, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but if you were going to play that formation yesterday and play a striker with Ross McCormick in behind him, you surely play, you know, Connor Salmon. I mean, you know, I know that he's not, I would never have signed him in the first place, but he's here. He's the one player who could perhaps hold the ball up, and therefore at least maybe you could play it into his feet and he could bring Ross McCormick into the game. The fact that you then play Danny Johnson, who's just a poacher, instantly, you know, rules McCormick out of the game. And I'm not suggesting that McCormick couldn't have done more to get involved and things like that, but, you know, even just the fact that from Robinson's post-match interview, it did sound as though he wants a big target man, but someone who can hold the ball up, as you say, Buster. Whether that would be the case, of course, we all know it wouldn't be. But then, why not just put Salmon in there anyway? Because he's the one player out of them who might actually have a bit of a chance in doing that. Don't leave him out, and then, you know, don't even bring him off the bench. Was he on the bench? I don't even know. You know, but don't start with Danny Johnson, whose game is not that. Bring on Curtis Main, whose game is not that and hasn't he done anything for months, and then moan that you don't have a player who can do what Connor Salmon might have been able to do, when he's the one guy that you brought in at the start of the season when everybody thought was a terrible signing. It's baffling. I just don't know. I don't know what to make it. It almost feels as though it's all the media team's biggest sort of most ambitious project yet is to absolutely rip the pisses all, and it's all a big joke.
I think it's very difficult for the media guys though to present anything else. If they don't put out anything, then they're being quiet and they're hiding away from reality. If they put something out and the supporters don't agree with it, they get a backlash. To be perfectly honest, if they put anything out after last night, it was always going to get people's backs up. I think it's so difficult. Not that I'm aware of. They didn't put words in the manager's mouth. Stephen Robinson has come away with that. And to be fair, he could. There's possibly facts to back up Stephen Robinson's opinions and certain things. But to come out with that sort of attitude after a performance like that is really, really poor. And I think the thing about James Scott kind of switching the tack somewhat there, a young striker who hasn't had many opportunities, do you throw young guys in and suddenly you get a few negative results and it does become a relegation battle? Would he be able to hold up to that, the scrutiny and the potential criticism that goes with it? There's only one way to find out, I suppose, but it's a difficult time. And I looked at David Turnbull yesterday, I thought that David Turnbull was very quiet. He didn't have that creative edge to his game. In fact, he wasted quite a few passes. He was quite lucky not to get booked, at least, for a pretty rash tackle where I thought he went in quite high. So the negative results and the negative atmosphere perhaps are rubbing off on some of these guys. And you know what the Motherwell support are like? They're not backwards at coming forwards with criticism. He potentially get James Scott in there. He doesn't get the right service. He doesn't score goals. And you can put him back, and 2-3 years later, he could be anywhere. But it's very unlikely that he'll make it at Fir Park because he'll be remembered for his initial appearances. And there's not many young players that I've seen that haven't got off to a good start that then turn it around, unfortunately.
Well, don't get me wrong. Jake Hasty did perfectly well yesterday. But I think I said to Jay yesterday, when they brought him on with, you know, 10 minutes to go, whatever it was, said that very fucking good. Throw him in and, you know, let your fucking season rely on a young boy who's just come back for a loan at a, you know, championship team. I thought it was, as I say, he done very well, and I was obviously wrong, but I thought this is no the right time to give Jake Hasty 10 minute a cameo appearance. But as I say, Jake Hasty done reasonably well, done what he could when he came on and, you know, bagged a goal. That was basically, you know, if I probably had to choose who was the best player in the park based on their appearances, their appearance time, you can't really say he done anything wrong, so it'd probably be him you'd be choosing. But just in the, you know, in the manner of what you're saying, they're throwing young boys in it when it's the going's tough. But I just thought that was a wrong move. I was ultimately proved wrong, I suppose, but I don't think, as I say, you know, I wouldn't like to think that if, for example, Robinson turned to James Scott, which, by the way, he fucking won't. We know he won't. Don't kid him, they won't. If he turned to James Scott and then just started punting the ball at his head because he's 6'2" or whatever, you know, that'd be the wrong way to go about it, I think, and I'd hate to see that happen.
I mean, just on the Hasty point, I do agree. I think there is a little bit of hypocrisy in terms of, you know, a lot of folk do, you know, sometimes go over the top in terms of clambering for young players to get their chance. And Robinson has came out many, many times and saying, no, we do it at the right time and this and that. And we make sure that they're not going into, you know, situations that are going to dent their confidence and all that. So to then be in a situation where we're crashing out the cup and you put on a player knowing full well that the likelihood at that stage is they are going to be part of a team that's going to get absolute dog's abuse at full time. I do think there is a bit of hypocrisy there. Now, obviously, you need to balance that between genuinely thinking that you can possibly turn the tie around. If you genuinely think that's the case, then you perhaps have to go with it. But I do think there's hypocrisy there. And just in James Scott, you know, in recent interviews with Robinson, particularly when they were in Tenerife, James Scott sounds brilliant. You know, he's talking him up, but we'll probably never see. We'll probably never see if that's the case.
It's frustrating. And again, maybe that's another element that's turning me against the manager somewhat, because I don't believe that he does show enough faith in the youth setup. We've obviously had Stephen Craigan leave the club recently. Stephen McManus left the club as well. So maybe there is a wee bit of a belief that the young players coming through aren't going to be to the level we hope. But surely, even the likes of Leeds trying to bid for Stuart McKinstry and talk of up to $400,000 being on the table. So surely there is talent there that we can at least knock on the door, because the senior players aren't producing, so why not? But I do get the two ends to the argument. See, just a fight on yesterday and the just general the team at the moment. A lack of a leader really stands out as well for me. I know Peter Hartley's the captain, but for me, Peter Hartley, and I've said before, it's too much of a hothead, too unsettled, really, to be a captain for my liking. I don't think he's particularly inspirational, and I think that it's been a poison chalice, the captaincy at Fir Park for a couple of years. Carroll McHugh really went backwards after being handed it, and Peter Hartley has been nowhere near the player that he first was at Fir Park since being handed the captaincy either. What else that stands out that could maybe take over that berth, or at least provide some support to Peter Hartley, who does seem to be struggling as well?
I mentioned it to Jay yesterday. I think it was when Davy Turnbull probably should have been booked, as you mentioned, Sparra. The big boy Van der Veg was immediately in his face, in the ref's face, shouting, and a couple of Ross County players can run about him. And the only person who stepped up was Carol McHugh. Carol McHugh stepped up and was sort of defending his teammate, saying to the ref, you know, get this guy out of your face. He's asking him for a booking. Can you, you know, the sort of things you'd imagine the players were saying. And I said to Jay at the time, I says, you know, I think that's the sort of, you know, teamsmanship and leadership or whatever that you'd expect for somebody who was your captain. And, you know, I also said in Twitter yesterday, I didn't think it was right taking Carol McHugh off. I had about 10 people tell me I was wrong and 10 people agree with me. So Carol McHugh, as we mentioned earlier, is obviously one who really cuts everybody right down the middle. But I don't know if it's a case of we don't really have a leader. You know, Peter Hartley is often, so this season at least, been referred to as a bit of a mouthpiece. You know, he says things, whatever, and then seems to go missing. You know, when, and again, these are no my words. These are just think because Peter looks hard as fucking. If he whoever wants to fight me, I'll be running away. But it's you know, there isn't really a leader on the park. But I think that's, again, that comes down to, I don't really know if there's a leader off the park either. Yesterday we just didn't seem to know what we were doing. There should, you know, and I didn't notice it at all yesterday, but I seen many fans comment again on the forums and on Twitter that Robinson was sort of looking awfully dejected on the sideline, you know, rather than being a bit animated when we were losing, whatever. And as Jay mentioned, when it came to 75 minutes and we were 2 goals down, not one of the players were bothering their ass. It was not as if, you know, we're not suggesting you start immediately shelling the ball into the box, but there was no urgency whatsoever. There was you'd have thought it was a meaningless friendly or that we were winning 2-0. And again, I don't know if it comes down to not having any leaders on or off the park, but there's definitely something no right there. And I don't know what it is, but it's something that needs looked at.
The thing I'm a little bit dubious when it comes to, you know, accusations about leaders in the park and, you know, your captain and things like that. At the end of the day, we're in the stand. We don't know what's been said on the park. We don't know what's been said at half time, before the game, after the game. We don't even know how the captain conducts himself, you know, in terms of training, in terms of being that link between the manager and the players. You know, I don't really know what it is that, you know, we're looking for. Is it because Peter Hartley doesn't spend 90 minutes shouting and swearing? I mean, I don't understand the idea that we don't have a leader on the park. Now, if it's just because we've been shit, then fair enough. If that's a viable argument, then I'll accept that. But I always find that a bit of a weird one. You know, we're not privy to what's even being said. So to suggest that, you know, Peter Hartley isn't cut out to be captain because, you know, why? Because we're not seeing him screaming for 90 minutes. I just don't get it. There's a lot to being a captain than, you know, Motherwell fans going, oh, look at Peter Hartley, he's going to have his nut at somebody. You know, that's not necessarily what being a captain's about. So I would, you know, leave it entirely up to the players to decide whether there's a leader or leaders or not, because I don't think there's any Motherwell fan that could accurately, you know, judge that.
Yeah, good. I kind of disagree with you, to be honest. It's, You'd think that, you know, the captain's armband anyway is for nothing but nostalgia, I suppose. What's really the point in it? You're the guy that gets to give the coin toss. Other than that, there should be 11 leaders on the park, essentially, I suppose.
Yeah, but I suppose what you see on the pitch gives you a reasonably accurate representation of how things are going. And it's back to the stage of the ball going in the net and the players looking at each other and shouting at each other rather than actually kind of taking any ownership of it. And
I don't really know what that means.
After the game yesterday, were a wee bit half-arsed as well, but
I just don't really understand what that means. You know, at the end of the day, I would agree with Busta. I think nowadays, particularly in the modern game, where, you know, every player in the park is expected to be constantly talking. You know, you need to be constantly communicating, constantly talking to your teammates. And what really sets the captain aside these days is you know, what you hear more of these days is the captain leads by example in terms of professionalism and training, in terms of almost being the sort of the union rep, in terms of going to the manager with player concerns and things like that. So the idea that, you know, your captain, I just don't know what it is that we're supposed to see from a captain on the park. Obviously, if a captain is completely silent, you know, head down and bad body language and all that, then I could agree with that. And I would argue that that's perhaps what we saw at times with Callum McHugh, you know, and led to him giving up the armband. But I think to, you know, throw accusations around about Peter Hartley not being a good captain and all that, I just don't see what the actual concrete evidence is meant to be of that.
Yeah, I don't even know if I'm... I just don't feel that he's much of a leader on the park. I can only see what I see in the 90 minutes on a Saturday. I certainly don't think he's... But I suppose when things aren't very inspiring at the time, then maybe I'm just looking for things. But if there was anything just there to stand out and be positive, then we would talk about them instead. But as I say, I think there's just a lot of kind of a blame culture almost goes around when the chips are down at Motherwell just now, and that's a bit of a problem as well. The ball goes in the net yesterday, and all you see is just it's 10 individuals screaming at each other over conceding a goal, and it doesn't seem to have any sort of positive effect, does it?
I didn't see them screaming at each other because I probably looked away, but you know, if they were screaming at each other, that's I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, that maybe shows a wee bit of passion, they care a wee bit. But again, I'll be honest with you, I didn't notice that. That's maybe because I wasn't looking, but I don't even notice that. And I think that's what gets me sort of down and dejected about it. You know, it's like, ah, fuck, there's another one. And again, when just as we mentioned, obviously, putting Hasty on, I think it was you, Jay, that said, you know, throwing him in there, basically, everybody's going to be shouting and bawling, screaming, booing, whatever. And I can't really remember there being much of a we're upset sort of booing. There was more like a boo, this is shite, right, let's get fucking out of here. You know, I don't, the lack of reaction basically was again, maybe I was just in my own wee world, but I didn't really hear much reaction, and that sort of is a bit more worrying than, you know, everybody actually did stay and geek them dogs abuse. You know, the fact that there was, 3,000, 4,000 people there, the fact that probably 75% of them had left by the final whistle is much more worrying than, you know, if they'd stayed and fucking geared them dogs abuse.
Yeah, it's just a highly disappointing game. And it was, as I said, there was a bit of shouting after the goals yesterday, but it's just been a kind of common thread, I think, in terms of the kind of infighting following the concession of a goal, which is fairly commonplace, but I just think that it's creeping in more and more, and just this unity and everything else that we're led to believe exists. The warm weather training in Tenerife, it didn't serve us very well yesterday, but we move on to Hibs on Wednesday night now, and I guess the last thing you really want at this moment in time is another game in 4 days' time, but we have to find a way back. If we were to get 3 points, we would move relatively close to Hibs on the table, and while that doesn't seem like a massive thing at the moment, there's every possibility we can get 3 points if somehow we can stir a reaction from the players. And Stephen Robinson has often mentioned that a characteristic of this team is that they can bounce back. It's not been highly evident this season, but there's always hope, maybe, surely.
Well, Hibs might be near us in the table, but, and you can disagree with me if you want, but they're probably light years ahead of us in terms of, you know, there's 4 years at the bottom of the table, basically. The rest of them above us are in a league of their own. For Wednesday, if we make their goalie make a couple of saves, you know, that'll maybe cheer me up a bit more.
Progress.
No, exactly. I'm not even kidding you. And if we're going to just plunder along here at the end of the season, we might as well start with the basics. I don't know how many saves the goalies have had to make at Fir Park. The opposition goalies have had to make at Fir Park over the last 5 or 6 games. I would guarantee you it's less than 10 in total. Guarantee is a strong word, by the way. I would guess it would be less than 10 in total. And that's serious saves. No, nothing stupid or shitey. I mean, like, we've forced the goalie to make a save. I guarantee it's less than 10.
You've definitely gone that over 100, because you were just swearing in the midst of that for just no reason whatsoever.
See, to be honest, see if that... I did catch that, actually, and see if that was something that they had put money on. We'd have went for the under, and we'd have done it completely clean, because, you know, that'd have been mere fun.
Well, let's hope they haven't, because I think you've possibly... borderline 3 figures at this moment in time. So
I've been pretty conservative, I thought, to be honest with you. Just trying to obviously no play up to your tweet earlier.
Well, it wasn't me that suggested that you would swear a lot. I just agreed with it.
No, but seriously, if we can have 5 shots in target, the goalie has to really make an effort to save. That'll be me. I'll be happy with that. And I'm not even kidding you on.
No, actually, the thing is,
set the bar really high in terms of expectation there.
I think he's actually worryingly spot on. I said during the winter break there that, you know, particularly, let's be honest, were we ever, you know, I don't think MD genuinely thought that we're going to go on and win the cup. A nice cup run would have been good, but in terms of the league campaign, it's largely over. So all I was really looking for between now and the end of the season was an increase in the performance levels, something to actually be a wee bit buoyed by, something to say, right, okay, there's a bit of improvement being made, bit of progress, perhaps over the summer we can get back on track. So, you know, as ridiculous as it sounds, Bust is absolutely spot on. You know, Wednesday night is about just seeing something that gives you, you know, a little bit of hope that things aren't going to be this dire between now and the summer.
Yeah, and I don't even know what we'll come up with in terms of personnel either. Ross McCormack clearly was nowhere near ready to start a game. And to be fair, I thought that had been made quite clear before we even signed him. He was going to be out for 2 to 3 weeks. So it meant it would be end of January, start of February. And whether that was just a cover-up to get him out of Australia and get him to Fir Park quicker.
I sort of joked he was at it, to be honest with you, but... He was clearly...
clearly, wasn't he?
It's ludicrous that he even started. Again, I don't want to go back on what I've said already, but for Robinson then to come out and say, I knew he wasn't fit, but fuck it, I just put him on anyway.
Well, I think unless there is like an agreement with McCormick that if he says he's able to play, we have to start him every game, like as though it's part of his loan agreement. If that doesn't exist, then I got the impression that we actually just thought, fuck it, we'll start him for 45 minutes and... You know, almost like a lazy approach to the game. We'll start him for 45 minutes. He's got a bit of quality. Hopefully he'll, you know, score and set up a goal, and then that'll be us home and dry by half-time. And obviously, when we get to half-time and it's clear that that's no happening, then everything then just goes to shit.
See, in regards to what you actually said there as well, Sparra, the midfield, for me, let's say we go away again, 2 centre midfielders. Who would you choose? Whether it's a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-4-2, because let's assume we're going to play the wingers. Who's your midfield to?
Centrally, just now, I would play Campbell and Grimshaw.
Alan Campbell's a definite, to be honest with you. Aye.
Is Campbell fat? Like, where is he?
He was on the bench yesterday again, and I just. For me, Callum McHugh's absolutely ever-present in our team when he's fit. But for me, he's much better at the back than he is in the centre of the park. But Alan Campbell would possibly be a better centre-half than Callum McHugh is as well. I just think he's a far superior player. We should definitely be in our team.
For me, you know, I side a little bit with Buston this. I think Callum McHugh has a lot to offer, but I think he's got a lot to offer in a midfield three. I think if you're going to play, if we were going to play the way we played, as I said earlier, if we're going to play with somebody like McCormick in the hole and effectively go with two midfielders with a lot of space in front of them, I don't think McHugh has the pace, you know, to deal with that. And I think it also ruins Davy Turnbull because he's sitting back. I think if you were to put a midfield trio of, for example, Campbell, McHugh and Turnbull, that's got a better chance of working because yeah. McHugh can basically sit in there, kick folk, win headers. But you've got two players there to cover in terms of then taking the ball off them and trying to make something happen. If it's a midfield two, I wouldn't play Carroll McHugh, but if it was a midfield three, I would.
Also got the option of playing Turnbull in a more advanced position as well and get him up supporting the whatever we're playing up top because he's got a keen eye for goal and he's creative in that sense as well. So I think there's more roles that we could play David Turnbull in. But I thought coming into the break that Liam Grimshaw was playing. In fact, he was possibly the standout against St Mirren. He played well against Kilmarnock. Not actually sure whether he started against Aki's as well, didn't he? He was playing reasonably well, that's my point. Alan Campbell, though, is rarely, very rarely let Motherwell down.
Mm.
So it's strange that he's kind of popped out of the starting reckoning.
Don't start talking about David Turnbull when he would play different roles, otherwise he'll start at wing back on Wednesday.
Yeah, good point. I sort of inadvertently, you know, with yourself, Spar, as well, you were involved, was sort of, I don't want to say defending because that's not the right word. Well, I probably was, but defending Carroll McHugh because I don't think McHugh is as bad as people make it. I think he wins a lot of the ball in that sort of holding midfield where he plays. When he gets the ball, he's garbage. I'll give you that. You know, I don't think he knows what a pass is, to be fair. Just kick it and see what happens. And he, as people have said, he's no the fastest, he's no the most mobile. But I think he wins a lot of the ball, and depending on our shape, as you well said there, I think he's got a bit to offer. But if I was choosing two midfielders, I don't know who I'd pair him with, but Alan Campbell, you know, all day, every day, as you says, and I don't know if that would work with Campbell and Grimshaw in there together sort of thing, but do you know what? You might as well go with it, because as far as I says, Grimshaw was actually doing no too bad. You know, Grimshaw seems to be one that comes and goes as well. He seems to have like three or four great games, then two or three poor or mediocre ones, then disappear for another 3 weeks. So, but I just wanted to see what you would say there in regards to the midfield, because you know, we seem to have had a lot of sort of central midfielders this season, and I was just wondering, obviously, what people's preferred or you people's preferred sort of pairing would be.
No, and it was a good addition to the conversation. Just before we wrap up, the BBC Alba documentary Steelmen was shown on Friday, and it was absolutely excellent, it must be said. Got me right in the mood to go to Fir Park the following day, and then Mother went and ruined it. But Jay, you were lucky enough to go along in the Monday evening to the premiere as well, and met some of the guys involved in it, talk following it. A very good project and brilliantly shot, and it captured a different side of the 1991 Cup triumph as well, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a different side that actually is what kind of sets this aside from what we've seen before. I tend to be a wee bit of a, you know, critic the way that the club in particular completely overdo the 1991 thing. You know, I had a wee rant on Twitter during the week there about how, for example, the 1932 side, the achievement of winning the championship or the title, you know, is never going to happen again. And yet, you know, I think a lot of Motherwell fans wouldn't even know some, you know, a lot of the players that played in that side. We completely forget that. There's not really great deal of mention about it for Park, and yet anything that we can stick, you know, a 1991 label on, we absolutely jump at the chance. So when it was first announced, I was a little bit sceptical because, you know, we've seen it done to death, but you're completely spot on. The way it was balanced, you know, it was 50% about that team and that cup win, but obviously, you know, the other 50% was all about Ravenscraig, all about the, you know, the uncertainty and the upheaval and the communities and things like that. And when you marry the two together, it was a really worthwhile documentary. So, you know, and Purple TV have brought out some great ones, you know, Dundee United 87, you know, Aberdeen and Gothenburg 78 World Cup, the Tommy Burns one, the third Lanark. You know, it's almost a mark of quality when Purple TV do a Scottish football documentary. So it was always going to be half decent, and it was good that they did it justice.
Yeah, very little to add in that, but we will go into it more. This has been a bit of a lengthy one already, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, just to, as I say, just Jesse says, the documentary was absolutely fantastic. The whole Steelworks thing was, you know, something that I didn't expect to be involved as much, but, you know, it was good to see the guys who worked in the Steelworks as well talking about their own side of things, and, you know, even guys who didn't support Mother there were getting behind them. But as you say, we've went on for a good wee while, so I'm done. I'm going to get a cup of tea and go to bed.
The one thing I did think it was missing a wee bit was Craig Kennedy being on it as well. That would have really topped it off for me, but apart from that, we'll let that slide. But as I say, we'll go into it in more detail later on. It's now 9:45 and I've still not had my dinner. Guys, thank you very much. I would like to say I enjoyed that, but I actually feel quite knackered, to be honest.
It's a therapy session, if nothing else.
Are you going to try and swear a couple more times before we finish, Buster, or have you reached your quota?
Fuck.
You've been listening to the ASC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
it's your